Okay. Let's get ourselves underway here in the second session tonight. Go ahead and turn in your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. Let's start here in Proverbs chapter 1. And as you rightly said, this is where we're going to find the information that we're after. The table of contents for 1 of Sonship Edification and the exhortations for Sonship Education as well, which we should have a healthy respect for how important those exhortations are. They are just as important as the doctrine itself, just as critical. And that's one of the things that most of the doctrinal teachers always miss, that there has to be pre-doctrinal exhortations and even post-doctrinal exhortations that have just as much of an important impact on a heart, the human heart, and its ability to perceive those things than the actual doctrine itself. But when we look at the table of contents, let's put that back up on the board. Where in the table of contents are we? If you were to make the statement as far as the table of contents, what are we doing? Well, that's not what I mean. I mean the actual verse. There you go. This is where we are. We are in the position of, like you said, phase one of level one, but we are in the second kind of compartment of it, or part of it, to perceive the words of understanding. As it opens up there with the table of contents after verse one, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding. And as we came to appreciate, those have two roles to play, one of which is sonship orientation. When a father takes his son and he comes to know the wisdom and instruction, then he is to begin perceiving the words of understanding. And we are at that point in the table of contents that would alert us to what's supposed to be going on. This is just kind of like a study guide. That's what this is for. That's what Romans 8:16 through 39 is going to do. It's going to provide for us to perceive the words of understanding. So I'm not expecting you to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. As far as a summary statement goes, which I handed out to all of you, and if you don't have them, they're available on the website. As far as a summary statement, what is it that we're supposed to be getting information-wise when we perceive the words of understanding? Now, as again, unless there's something you want to say that's on the tip of your tongue, when you perceive the words of understanding, what is one of the main things that's, if you were to summarize what it's supposed to do? I'm just doing this. I'm not trying to test you. I'm just seeing if somebody knows it, it might be to the benefit of all of us. Yeah, that's good. That's one of the main things that you're doing when you perceive. What you're perceiving is how you're going to use it. Now, I'll put that up here. I've got it here somewhere. I think it's 40. I don't know how well you can see this. Our board is not working real well tonight, but it's not as bad as some other nights. When you perceive the words of understanding, you know, when we were knowing wisdom and instruction, you were basically going through that orientation part so that you have an attitude about your sonship edification by which your heart's desire when you're crying Abba Father is to want and desire to be educated. And one of the main features of sonship orientation is not to be a fool in your father's eyes and to despise wisdom and instruction. But he gets established in a lot of things there as well. But what I'm after is, since this is where we are, maybe we need to, just for a moment, remind ourselves of what that means when we are perceiving the words of understanding. It's an advancement on to know, on the words to know, when you've got perceive. Perceive in this context is to have insight and clear recognition into how something is going to work for you, how this is going to work for you. To realize the personal usefulness of it. I don't think you really appreciate the fact that when it comes, you don't need to turn there, but when it comes to Romans 12, 3 and following. He says things like, "For I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, so we being many are one body in Christ, and every one members of it." Now, all I'm after in that is, he goes into talking about us being members of the body, one of another, and a lot of things about that. When it comes to something, for instance, like our instruction in godly equity, in equity, one of the main features that he uses is the issue of how we deal with a weaker brother. And there's going to have to be some equitable decisions that we make. But when you go through the orientation and establishment exhortations, you're going to be told, and the genius of your father, so that he could write it in a book that is going to have to be around through generation after generation, through not just hundreds of years, but through thousands of years, it's going to have to be as applicable and as pertinent and as, oh, I've got another word I'm after, and it's as right now. What? Relevant. Thanks. It's going to have to be just as relevant in the year 2009 as it was in 1809. As it was in England in 1611. It's going to have to be as relevant and as pertinent in whatever language, whatever culture, whatever ethnicity, if it were in the Middle East, if it were in Asia, if it were in Africa, or if it was in South America, just as much as it is in the United States with our own goofy culture. So, in order to be able to do that, the genius of our Father is he teaches it to us in ways that are it's not an allegory; they are absolutely essential. But it also opens up avenues through which we say, you know, I see how this could work over here. I see how this very thing could work in this situation. Because what he's going to have to do is, if we go through our training, our vocational training on earth, and then we are put in the creature, in the heavenly places, that education we got on earth has to be able to be applicable there. We have to be able to use it there. You're going to see this in a way that you probably haven't even thought about yet before we even get done with Romans 8. And it'll come back to some things I once said when we were going through all of this, that one of the things you're going to learn as a byproduct of your sonship education, you're going to learn how angels think. Because you're going to have to judge them. And you're going to have to know how they're going to respond to an order you give them. How they're going to carry things out. What their inclination is going to be. And I don't know if this is sunk in yet or not, but that's what I'm after here. Going back, I'm not going to go back to it on the board right now, but I will. What I'm after is once again making sure that you understand what the sonship education is designed to do. It's not just designed to make you live a nice life now. This thing has more power in it than any other either single or combination of elements on the face of this earth. There's nothing that God has created, including, and Eric could speak to this better than me, any supernova that's blowing up out there or whatever, the megaton power in that, that is almost incomprehensible, is nothing compared to what you have when you roll up Romans through Philemon in your fist. And I'm understating it, by the way. I'm understating how powerful that is. Therefore, when you look at just a component of it, that thing is not just designed for one task. It's designed to be used in ways that you'll be able to recognize and have familiarity with and say, I learned that on earth. I learned that to do. I learned how to do that in that local assembly, and I can take that very skill and I can put it to use right here. And it's a marvel of how God put His Word together. And so, when it comes to reminding ourselves a little bit of that issue of the usefulness, at the time I just let it go at that. But now we can't just let it go at that. We have to build that up in our thinking and have an appreciation for how useful all of this is. And therefore, what we're going to obtain from learning the wisdom, receiving the instruction, and getting the understanding that our Father says He offers us. So therefore, to perceive the words of understanding in this context is to grasp in our understanding that the things God wants to educate us in as a son are designed to give us and will give us an understanding of things, because we're going to be perceiving the words of understanding, that we will have clear knowledge, remember this, of what is good in His sight and what is evil. And we're going to have to haul that out now and bulk that up a little bit. And we will be able then to make clear decisions where you don't have to be guessing. I hate that. I'm addicted to this little game called Sudoku. And I got a big thick book of it in my bathroom. That's more information you probably need to know, but there it is. I love those things. And I've been playing it for a year or more, and I'm learning that I'm getting better at it, because I'm able to perceive more how I can solve a problem without guessing. When you guess at that, you're always going to come up wrong. You're going to screw it up. And by the way, I use a pen. I don't use a pencil. When I put a number down, I know it goes there. And by that kind of illustration, it's the ability to make clear decisions. I know that's right. I know that's good. And I know that's not good. And that will preserve us and save us from wasting our time on worthless pursuits and useless pursuits. And it will keep us from being easily victimized by either the world's misguided norms and standards as to what we should do, as well as the machinations of the very policy of evil itself to try to trip us up along the way. Now, that's just the summary statement that we had for perceiving the words of understanding. We need some of the stuff that's in there. So, with that, all right, that tells us where we are. But you have to, when you look at Proverbs now, and you begin looking at the book of Proverbs and the table of contents, what we're going to have to now do, you're going to have to take a little more care here. And you're going to have to think a little more carefully about where you are in Romans 8, 26 and 27. You're now involved in sonship establishment, in perceiving the words of understanding, seeing and perceiving how something's going to work for me, how I'm going to be able to utilize it with clear knowledge of what's good and what's right and what's evil and what's wrong. And so with that in your mind, here's where you've got to be more careful. Even though that's the case, it may be, and in fact the truth of the matter is, that you can think about this to the degree we've talked about it, but you were told some things before this. And I'll show you where I'm going with this in a moment. Hopefully it'll all come out well at the end. You were actually told some things, even with this kind of refresher in our mind of where we are in perceiving the words of understanding, you were told some things back in sonship orientation that would have first alerted you. Because I'll tell you what you're going to find. you're going to find verses that deal with our subject in the exhortations to perceive the words of understanding, but it's not the first time that you're confronted with it. The first time you were confronted with it is in sonship orientation. When you came to know wisdom and instruction. All right? So let's see if that checks out. Because my understanding is you were told some things in sonship orientation that would have first alerted you to having these infirmities when you get underway with the actual instruction of the curriculum proper when all that starts. Well, if that's the case, you can easily find out by looking at the exhortations. And that's where we really need to look. If that's the case, and if you look at the exhortations that correspond to perceiving the words of understanding, you don't really find it there. Or at least, like I said, you find it mentioned, but it's not the first time. Do you remember what those verses are for this? No? Okay. Well, let's look at it. The exhortations, I think, is this chart. Here you are in level one. Here's the first part of it, to know wisdom and instruction. That's sonship orientation. Down here, to perceive the words of understanding, that's where we are, that's sonship establishment. What I've got on the board up there are the corresponding exhortations to each one of those sections. Remember this chart? Remember going over it? Well, now's when you need it. The issue of confronting something that you would not know how to pray for is actually mentioned in Proverbs 2, 10 through 22, but that's not where it's mentioned first. This is actually a matter up in sonship orientation. And so, at least that's where it's the first time you're told anything about it. So if that is true, where would you logically look for it? Now think for a moment. Think what I'm asking you. By the way, the exhortations for perceiving the words of understanding, Proverbs 2, 10 through 22, the exhortations for sonship orientation actually begin in Proverbs 1, 7, and they run all the way to verse 9 of chapter 2. There's two parts to it here, but they actually run all the way up there to verse 9 of chapter 2. Now, in those verses, have we been anywhere recently in those verses? Where? Huh? Proverbs 2, 1 through 5. Why? Right. That's the first time in either the table of contents or the exhortations that you make a noise, that you say something. Right? Come down and look at it. Proverbs chapter 2. And again, this is an exhortation about knowing instruction, but for right now, it's the final exhortation you get in your sonship orientation. Now, let me test you for a moment. Where in Romans does that happen? Up there. That's right, Helen. 8, 14, and 15. I know it's not stated there, but that's what a father does, and you would know that by following the curriculum when he's orienting his son to what it means to be adopted. Because one of the things we covered several times was the father's going to make the son aware of what the wisdom is and the instruction is and how important it all is. And in doing that, he's going to exhort him the way David exhorts Solomon. And I believe that first of all, we can zero in on just when it was that our Father, for the very first time ever, said anything to us in that exhortation of our sonship orientation that made it so we would begin thinking about realizing and recognizing we've got infirmities. This kind of infirmity that Romans 8, 26 and 27 is dealing with. Or at the beginning of our education, we wouldn't have enough insight and we wouldn't have enough perception to know what to ask for that would hamper us or hinder us or be a stumbling block for us when the time would come where we would have to make request and supplication of our Father in prayer and not know what in the world we should ask for. And so to zero in on it, where, again, you, in fact, you already have said it, but where in the exhortation for sonship orientation do we find ourselves for the first time saying something to our Father? Where? What verse specifically? Proverbs 2:3. Right? Proverbs 2:3. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding. It's the second of three ifs that are the three ifs that check out your commitment level. Verse 5 is the then. If all those ifs are met, then thou shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Now stop for a moment. Let's pretend that the last 7 or 8, I don't know how many Bible classes we've had on this subject, let's pretend that that all is condensed into about 5 minutes. And you're back to the point where you're sitting here recognizing some things that happened in sonship orientation, where you began saying something to your Father. We recognize why it's important to do it and why the Father wants us to do it. Logically, from here, where would I expect to find anything about these infirmities? I'm in the area. Where would I find it? Yeah. What? Exactly. How about checking out what happens right after that's said? I would expect to find something in that immediate area that alerts us to the kind of infirmities we will have that can be identified as not knowing what to pray for as we ought. All you've got to do is keep reading. And you only have to keep reading for about 4 more verses. Pick it up at verse 6. He says, "For the Lord giveth wisdom. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path." Now, I went slowly through that so that you would think about what you're reading. It's so easy to read right over a passage such as this and not really grasp the depth of what's being said to you and the power and capacity that's being described by the terminology and the phraseology you're confronted with there. Let's put it up on the board. Proverbs chapter 2, verses 6 through 9. I don't know if you can see it yet, but it's staring you right in the face, where you would say, "Holy cow. If that's what this thing is designed to do, I don't have a clue what to ask for." Well, let's see if we can draw it out. When you carefully, and I mean carefully and more perceptively, focus upon the terminology and the phraseology of these verses, especially 6, 7, 8, and 9, do you see that what's being described and put before you as a son, are terms and phrases that describe the kind of capacity and the kind of ability and the kind of power that the education and the curriculum gives you. Especially focused down here on the last two verses. He keepeth the paths of judgment. Now let me ask you something. When you read that, he keepeth the paths of judgment. How many are there? Is there just one? There's many. When you first read that, did you think that he keeps the path he chooses for me? That's not what it says. He keepeth the... I'm not sure I'm following you there. Hold that thought for a moment. Let me complete mine. Who chose the path of judgment? Who? Yeah, you do. Well, actually what he's saying, I'm waiting for you to choose a path. And this curriculum is going to make it so you choose the right one. And then I'm going to come along and I'm going to keep it for you. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way singular. There's paths plural and a way singular of his saints. Now, I'm just trying to get the ball rolling here. But that's what I mean by looking more perceptively at what you're being told. You're being told there are a bunch of these things called paths. This curriculum can work in a whole lot of different paths. But when I first get started, I'm standing at a fork in the road and I don't know which way to go or what to even ask for to determine which way to go. It isn't until I finally get along that I can make those decisions on my own. But the Spirit knows, and He can ask the Father for me. And the Father can do His part with me in searching my heart and sonship prayer. Now let's stop right there for a moment and clarify one other issue before we get around to that. As you read these, verses 6 through 9, does it strike you what David's talking about? Let's see if I can emphasize it. For the Lord giveth wisdom. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. What is he describing? Huh? Yeah, Proverbs 1:3. Oh, you mean to perceive the words, or the knowing wisdom and instruction? Well, yeah, it's applicable to that because it's an exhortation for that. I know you know this. No. I know you know this. Look at the terms.
He's describing the I forget what left, the wise.
No, what? No. Exactly. Wisdom. Judgment. Yeah, you've got... What he's doing here, the judgment, equity. And by the way, instead of using justice here, he uses another word very similar to that for an important differentiation, but it's what he's after. Those are the four decision-making skills of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. Now, you're in sonship orientation. Okay? You're not even sonship establishment yet, but he's making you aware of those four decision-making skills that you're going to have to acquire. And when verses 6 and 7 especially say, and what I'm after is, again, that's specifically my understanding of what he's describing and dealing with. For the Lord giveth wisdom out of his mouth. Let's take that first one there. Here in 6 and 7, when he says, the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He it layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler or the shield to them who walk uprightly. The wisdom he's talking about in those two verses, that's not talking about a whole bunch of wisdom. He's not talking about storehouses of boxes of wisdom in there that I've laid up and all this kind of business. It's not, so to speak, even categories of wisdom that he's talking about. My understanding is this is far more specific than that. That's why I say these aren't really general terms at all or generic terms. These are specific. And he's specifically talking about, when he mentions wisdom there, it's not broad in its meaning. He's talking about the very first component of sonship education when you receive the instruction of wisdom, which for us takes place in Romans 12:3 and following. That's what he's laid up for us. He's saying to his son who's just crying, Abba, Father, your father has... He gives wisdom, and out of his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He's laid up for you. When you get ready to finally crack the book open and begin to receive the instruction, he's laid up sound wisdom for you. And that has a power and a capacity to be a buckler to you when you walk uprightly. He's describing some capacities of the very first component of sonship decision-making, wisdom. And that is rightly so, as found up there in verse 3 of Proverbs chapter 1. The table of contents tells you that's what he's following, because it matches, it corresponds with that particular issue. All I'm after is that you recognize that he's actually talking about the first component of instruction of wisdom. Because the end result of the whole thing, down in verse 9, is then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity. Those are the remaining three. Yea, every good path. And what is it that sonship orientation is going to do, or sonship establishment will wind up with? Clear knowledge of what is good in his sight, what is evil in his sight. That's a good path, that's not a good path. But right now, I have no idea what a good path is and what an evil path is to that kind of degree. Those are your four components of sonship decision making that make up the balance of level one of sonship education. That's what I'm going to be learning in phase two of level one. Those four things: wisdom, justice, righteousness here, judgment, and equity. And so therefore, because the end result of the whole thing down in verse 9 is what it is, that sets and it fixes the context of the passage. That's what this passage is dealing with. It's talking to a son in orientation, but he's having his son look ahead and say, here's what this curriculum is going to do for you. When you get out of my mouth the wisdom I'm going to give you, it's going to be a buckler for you. It's going to come along and keep the path that you choose and preserve your way. And with that, you will understand every good path. In other words, all he's dealing with here in these four verses is level one sonship education. That's what he's dealing with. And that's what we have, this is where we have to put our finger on and have to focus our attention on this exhortation, because it alerts us to the kind of problems we're going to have, or infirmities that we have as we get underway. And so even though this exhortation occurs in phase one of level one, a sonship education, in fact, it occurs in the first part of phase one of level one, when you are to know wisdom and instruction. In other words, it occurs in sonship orientation. Even though the exhortation occurs at that point in the son's life, it's still looking forward to and alerting the son to a future time when the education finally gets underway in earnest, and it gives you as a son a glimpse into what the education has the power to do, the capacity to do, and the ability to do when you get there. It has the ability to choose many paths. It has the ability to be able to look ahead and say, when you're confronted with things, all right, here's a way I could go, all right? I need to make sure before I do this that that's exactly the best path I should take. And all four of these skills are going to come into play, plus one other issue. And it's the issue of the Father hearing what you intend to do and then searching your heart to see if there's any evil way in it. As David will say at the end of the 139th Psalm. But when you get started, you don't have the experience or perception fully developed yet to be able to do that. And until you do, the Spirit is going to come along and make intercession for you and ask and request and supplicate the Father in your stead by proxy, so to speak, so that you will be able to go right on unhindered, unperturbed, without a stumbling block whatsoever, to be able to allow for the Word itself to effectually work in your inner man. Now, that's not all I'm going to say about it, but I think that's probably enough for tonight. But I want you to think between now and Sunday about that issue of him coming along and keeping the paths plural and preserving the way singular of his saints. Because if my understanding's correct, we pass over that verse as if well, God's making all the decisions, he's pulling all the strings, and all he's going to do is say, you go down this path, and so I just go down this path. That's not sonship. An adult son, the father turns him loose after he's got his education properly, and he says, son, the way life is going to be, you're going to have 5, 10, 15 different choices to make about one thing, none of which are going to be exactly wrong, but you're going to have to be able to perceive the one I would take. Well, father, being a freshman and everything and just getting started in all this, I don't know what path you would take. I don't even know really what to ask for to find out. Well, don't worry about it. There's a provision that's been made for you so that those issues can still go on and you can go on through that initial beginning stage and get your feet under you to where you'll be able to one day stand at many different paths and be able to choose one here, one there, and each of the paths that you choose, he's going to come along and say, yep, that's one I would have chosen if I did it myself. And the doctrine is going to provide of that curriculum a preserving of that and a keeping of that so that you may be the only, it may be you're the only one on it, or maybe just me and you. But that's the right one to take. Now, you're all looking at me like either you're painting a bullseye on my forehead or like I'm trying to sell you a used car that's a lemon. It might take a little time to spend with that. But my understanding is that what is happening here between now and Sunday, read, reread, 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 spend some time with these and see if nothing else, you can start perceiving by the terms and the phrases how you're being confronted with the curriculum's ability to do a whole lot of things and its power and its capacity to do a lot of things and not just be one-dimensional and singular in what each task is designed for. Because there's going to come a time when we get to Romans 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 and following, where you're going to learn things here and realize, but I can also use it here. But you don't know that right now. Right now, you'll just see it one way. And so, your prayer life will take on a different dimension. Instead of just praying to your Father and going over your day with Him, well, this is what went right. This is what went wrong. This is what I need help on. This is what I understand. You're going to start, that's going to make a corner, turn a corner, where you're going to start to be just as concerned about what tomorrow brings. And there's going to be certain times in your life when you're going to be faced with critical decisions that take place tomorrow or next week or wherever, but we'll use the word tomorrow for now. And instead of just talking to my Father about how today went, I'm going to start telling Him, I got to make this decision. I'm going to take this part of the curriculum You taught me, though it deals with, it seems to deal with in a totally unrelated subject. But I've realized that that is a skill that works here too. And you're going to say, does it? Because I'm going to do this and then this and then this tomorrow. Now I want you to search my heart about what I just told you and see if there be any wicked way in me. Does that all ring true with how this curriculum can be used in many different ways to do many different powerful things? And when that searching is over, you will know in your heart, either I can proceed, we can say amen, Father, let's go to bed, and we'll wake up tomorrow, and we're going to do exactly what we talked about here tonight. Or you'll recognize, oh, I realize that's inconsistent with this or this or this. Something to do with wisdom, something to do with justice, something to do with judgment, something to do with equity. That wouldn't be the best path to follow. You see what I mean? How your prayer life is going to take a turn, and you're going to start focusing upon what you're going to do with it instead of what it's doing with you. That's why you're going to be going down paths of judgment. Well, by the way, that's the reason they're plural there. It's because it's dealing with judgment. If it was justice, He would keep the path of it. But judgment has many different ways it could go. That's one of the reasons why I guess I wanted to try to stress, or I tried to get across when we first went over it, when we talked about paths and ways and things like that, that you start thinking a little more perceptively about what you're being shown there, and you'll start, things will start popping off the page, and you'll start saying, gosh, this is designed to do this and this and this. Holy moly, I'm just starting out. I don't know how to do all that stuff. The Father said, I know that. That's not a hindrance, not one bit. You're not going to be handicapped. You may not have the ability that you'd like to have right now, but you're not going to be handicapped in being able to proceed on and having a successful operation of that curriculum in your heart in any way, because I've made a provision for that. And when you were first told that, and you were reading that, you would have gone, He keepeth the paths of judgment, preserve the way of His saints. Okay. I'd say, all right. He doesn't say much more about it right there. By the way, you can go on down. Like I said, there in the next exhortation, which deals with establishment, sonship establishment, verse 10, when wisdom entereth into thine heart and knowledge is pleasant in thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. There's more information right there about it. That's why I said it's there. It's just that the first time you're ever confronted with it is in these four verses earlier on in Proverbs 2, in an exhortation of your orientation to sonship. So I'd read, you know, he talks about that strange woman, that evil man there in verse 18, for ours inclineth to death, her paths unto the dead. Man, I tell you, when you couple the first part of chapter 2 with the last part, you're almost scared stiff. It's kind of like being at a place where you got to step out and you say, I'm too scared to. If I step this way, it may be a path of that strange woman, and her paths lead unto the dead. And by the way, that's the functionally dead. I don't want to go down a path of the functionally dead. So you'd be so inclined to be so scared, you'd just say, Father, I'm not going to move. So no. That's not how it's going to be at all. I'm going to make a provision for you so that you can just relax and know that all of this is going to take place properly. You don't need to be concerned about it at all. Right now, I want you to have full confidence in what I've done. And I know this is bothersome to you. So I'm going to relieve and have an antidote and a cure for that bothersome issue it is to you. So he gives you Romans 8, 26 and 27. And it relieves it, relaxes you. Yes.
So the path that, I guess, you know, we've talked about David and the perfect hatred that he had for the enemy, and that he wanted to make sure that he had his father's mind on, that he was right, that he had his father's mind on. But the path, I mean, and then you've talked about who should I marry, what should I do. You know, these are major life events. You know, I get up in the morning, I go to work, I do some stuff, and I go home. You know, so, I mean, the path could also be, you know, how do you treat a person that perhaps treats you in a way that's not well or whatever, it's not right. So the path could be, you know, how do you react? Father, I want your mind on, you know, make sure that I don't. Or, I mean, we talked about major things, but these paths can be very,
yeah.
You know, what would seemingly be insignificant,
by comparison, maybe. Yeah. But the thing of it is that you'll find the conversation like that you have be like that at first. And I mean, even after you start through the curriculum and get your feet going under you and you get along a little ways, but you will find later on that you will also recognize that there were maybe some things you prayed for along those lines that were right and proper for you to pray at that time. But later on in your curriculum, later on in the education, you look back on it and you say, I don't even have to pray for that. I so have my Father's mind on, I don't need to even ask Him for that now. Because I know exactly what to do in those situations. But I don't think you'll ever get to a point, especially when the adversary begins to attack and when the adversary takes the gloves off, that you'll ever be at a point where the searching of the heart for critical decisions that you're going to be making and what you're going to be doing with the curriculum. It's not just a decision I make, but what am I going to do with this thing in this detail of my life or that detail or details that haven't even arisen in your mind right now, that there will always be an indispensable need for this of one form or another. But I think you will see it, and I'm going to use this word because it's not a bugaboo word to me, but you will see it evolve. You'll see, you go through a process where some things now, when you look back on it, you realize, if I'd have just had the full godly understanding of equity, which lies on top of judgment, justice, and wisdom, if I had the full complement of that, I wouldn't have had to even go to my Father with that in prayer. I can handle those things as a son. I know exactly what. So what I'm saying is, you'll see that take different forms. I think you'll see it, you know, it's what makes that constant communion and fellowship and communication not only necessary, but to be the wonderful, enjoyable thing that it is between you and your Father. To have those moments to talk about and deal with His curriculum, with His Spirit leading you through it, to put those things into effect in all those details. And that's the beauty of being a son and having my Father there with me. But yeah, I think what you say is right. I think you're perceiving it right. But if my understanding is correct, and I think it is, this is where you would put your finger on it and say, here's where I was very first told some things that I would have to look at and say, you know what? I haven't got a clue as to what to ask for when it comes to choosing one of those paths. And Sunday, we're going to bulk this up some. I'm not done talking about this section yet, so that we might have a better perception of it. But spending time with these four verses is going to be helpful to you to just make sure you're not rewording things in your head. I do it all the time. Or I'll read a passage and think it means this, and then I'll look at it real carefully and say, well, it's not saying that at all. And so, anyway, anybody else? Okay. Hopefully that's making some sense. Well, we'll stop right there and pick it up and maybe smooth things out then on Sunday morning before we leave this issue and go to the searching of the heart in the 139th Psalm.